You know, I don't really know what you can do as far as being prepared for a rain delay. You know, because Auburn baseball goes 2-1 in Hoover. You allow a grand total, if I have my math right, of 3 runs. But the rain delay on Saturday feels like it kind of messed up everything against Arkansas. Welcome to the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby, Sonny DeShera. It's going to be a massive show today. I'm chatting with Sonny here about Hoover. Then we've got an interview. The three of us sit down with Derek Guevara, Auburn third baseman, talk about his season so far, his feelings about regionals. And then Brad Law and I are going to sit down and talk about the regional this weekend, the bracket, what to expect, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But Sonny, the rain delay on Saturday, from the outside, it really felt like things, the team wasn't the same coming out of the delay as it was going in. Was that something that, like, you could kind of, that y'all were worried about, or that y'all were kind of concerned, like, hey, if this game goes into a delay, we've got to find a way to get going again immediately when it ends?
Yeah, it's always hard when you're going into a delay losing. It's easier to be like, hey, let's go back out there and get it going and be ready to go. And then when you come into a rainy day winning, it's like, all right, let's just stay on the that. It's hard. It's hard to come out of a rainy day period, whichever side you're on. And especially when our starter wasn't able to go back in, we had Hetzler, who's great, right? Mm-hmm. He gave up one run.
5 innings. My God.
Yeah. And then they threw that kid who has like a 1 ERA for 5 innings or however long.
Ethan McElvain. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, it literally felt like whoever scored next was going to win with those two. And of course they did. So it's just tough.
Yeah. So like, walk us through, I guess, and maybe you don't have to be specific as to what happened on Saturday, but just like walk us through a traditional rain delay when it's something that's, it's going to stretch over an hour, you know, your starter's burnt. Like, are you guys like eating? Are you stretching? Like, what are you doing to stay locked in? How are you passing the time? What does that look like inside the dugout, inside the clubhouse?
Some guys are just kind of laying around, sitting around, playing games on their phone, listening to music. It's just kind of hanging out, just kind of waiting for the, all right, we got 30 minutes till we play type of thing. So it's just a lot of waiting.
Yeah. And I imagine the difficulty for some players, and thinking back to my playing days, I feel like I was probably in that boat, is trying to not stay amped up the entire time, mm-hmm. you know, let yourself relax. And then getting back into that competitive mindset when it's time to go play again, especially if you don't know how long until you're going to go play.
Yeah.
What's the longest rain delay you think you sat through in the minors? Because I know that I've seen some minor league rain delays that can stretch on because they want to get the game in.
Yeah.
Like multiple hours.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt, multiple hours. I can't think of a specific one, but
yeah.
Usually they just say, all right, bang it, you play 2 sevens tomorrow.
Yeah, so which is nice. I like the only, I don't want it in the majors, but in the minors, I don't mind the 7-inning doubleheaders. Mm-hmm. You get some fun stats like Berkey, our friend Blake Burkhalter, had a complete game in the minors because it was a 7-inning doubleheader. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, got a complete game shutout. Let's go, Berkey. And then I saw the stats and I'm like, so maybe there's an asterisk on it, but still, it's still a complete game shutout.
Still cool.
Yeah, still cool to have. Okay, so in Hoover and all, right, Auburn goes 2-1. And looking at game one against LSU, 3-1, the thing that stands out from the outside is how it felt like some of these games were maybe closer than we expected, right? It's 1-1, Auburn-LSU after 4. And then, you know, Rembert gets I'm not going to say, I guess, Rembert forces the error. It's really, I felt like Brandon McCrane's speed maybe forced. There's a throwing error. Brandon McCrane scores, and then Guevara hits a home run later to kind of seal it. But what was the mindset going into Hoover? I know Butch talked about it's time to, you know, make a run in Hoover and win the whole dang thing. But, like, in the end of the day, we all knew going in and coming out, it wasn't really going to change anything for the national seeding. Mm-hmm. What was the mindset going in, and kind of how much were guys willing to push to win Hoover knowing that it wasn't going to change things at the end of the day.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to win for sure. We just like Coach Thompson said, hasn't been done in a long time, and yeah, the guys are pretty bought into winning it. So losing on Saturday definitely was tough. But I mean, in the tournament, you know, it doesn't matter who you're playing. Like we played LSU.
Yeah, I played them all year. Yeah.
And they're throwing a guy who has a 7 ERA, but he's got really good stuff and just has a good day. And then the reliever they bring in was also good. So it's like they got good players. They just didn't have the best year. And so that's what's hard about a conference tournament.
I was about to say, I feel like that's the tough part when people think about Hoover and how Auburn's not always been great in Hoover. Mm-hmm. Is you kind of look at and you're like, oh, well, they should have beat LSU easily. But to your point, really talented players. The season as a whole didn't work out well, but you know, Zach Cowan's a good arm. Casey Devin struck out 8 dudes in 4 2/3. It felt like he kind of had his way with the zone. What was the ABS system like? Because I remind me, you got a little bit of time in AAA. They had the challenge system when you were there, if I remember right. How helpful was that when you were talking to the guys about knowing when to challenge and what it was going to be like there in Hoover?
Yeah, I didn't have a say so about when they challenged or anything, but I don't like the ABS for college because they made it bigger than
that's a point that we talked about. Like, yeah, it was wider on the
ridiculous.
Side.
Yeah,
and the zone up and down was bigger than the pro zone.
And if they say that, you know, it barely has to clip the zone, well, if it's 2 inches off the plate and it's barely clipping that ABS zone, that's just not, you're not hitting that. So a lot of the umpires I talk to don't like it. They like the normal zone, but they don't like the bigger zone. And you know,
part of the testing in the minors that MLB was doing was figuring out the right size of the zone, figuring out how to make that work. And they went with the exact width of the strike zone. They didn't give the extra inch of buffer on either side. And I feel like that's really the mistake the SEC made there. Yeah. You could make the argument up and down. You'd given them a little bit more up and a little bit more down was fine. The sides looked like they were the big issue. And I remember one of the first games of the tournament I watched was when Missouri was getting like 37 overturn calls. Yeah. And it was like cutters in that just barely clipped, to your point, clipped the edge of the expanded zone.
Yeah, it's bad pitches.
And it's like, there's no way this dude's hitting this cutter.
Yeah.
And on his hands.
Like, but that's what it looked like to me. All the stuff that was challenged were bad pitches that just got lucky on.
Yeah, so
because you can't just implement that type of zone for a weekend and expect it to be perfect.
Yeah,
you know, like they hadn't tested that at all. So
yeah, and if that hadn't been the strike zone going into this, it's kind of hard to be like, hey, this is the strike zone now. And
exactly,
I understand that kind of frustration. But hey, you guys persevered 2-1 in Hoover. Looking at the offense in some of this, I feel like a lot of this was kind of the usual suspects, right? It was Chase Frelick having big games, Eric Guevara having some big games. Bub's catch was fantastic, and Bub having a big game there. Is there any thoughts, and I'm not going to say concerns because I don't think anybody's concerned, but is there any thoughts about when you get to this weekend, there's going to need to be more from the guys that are farther down in the order maybe than what we saw in Hoover? Because I felt like a lot of Hoover, like some of the guys were getting on base. Bristol Carter had 2 hits in that A&M game.
Yeah.
But it still kind of feels like a lot of the run scoring's being driven by the top of the order. How sustainable is that?
You know, it's hard because when you get to this point, if teams see that, they're just not even going to mess with the top of the order.
Yeah.
They're just going to pitch around him. If they get him out, cool. If they get him on base, whatever. And they're going to attack our bottom of the order. And that's how every good team is. Like, no good team has 9 good hitters. Like, that's except maybe Georgia. Like,
yeah. Well,
and that's a once in a lifetime.
Your College World Series team had 8, I feel like.
Yeah, we had 8.
It's fun at time, like y'all had 8. So,
yeah, like we had 8, and you know, we have good hitters, but like you said, it's the being all together. When we're all together as one, oh my gosh.
Linking up is what's called.
We don't even come close to, like, it's ridiculous, but. When you got to face a guy like McIlvain, you got to be able to put some at-bats together.
Yeah, and on the note of that, like, in Hoover, how much can you guys realistically be prepping for every possible opponent, or is it more so of like, hey, you know, we faced A&M. Here's what this guy did last time. Here's what we've seen him do. Mm-hmm. But you're really just kind of focusing more on here's what I'm going to do more so than what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, especially with A&M and Arkansas, we knew exactly what, like, A&M threw the exact same pitches that we faced there. And then Arkansas threw pitches that we faced too. So it's like, you know, hey, here he is. Talk to guys, see what you remember from him. And then with LSU, some of the guys remembered both of those pitchers from last year, so that helped out. But it's like you said, like, you got to move on quick. It's not like you're – it's just like now. You know, you got Milwaukee game one, and then whoever wins the next game, you got to worry about them quick.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated by this. So you just mentioned guys remembering guys from the previous year. Mm-hmm. When, like, everybody's different, obviously, but like for you, when you remembered facing a guy, was that like you remembered specific, like how he got you out and where you were successful? Do you just remember like general, I remember he had a good breaking ball? Like, what level of detail are you remembering if you're like, I faced this guy three times last year?
Yeah, I just remember what he looked like and like what the ball looked like coming out of his hand. Not more of like, oh, he got me out on this or that.
Okay.
It's just what the shape is, the release point, all that.
And I feel like that's probably the biggest part, is just being comfortable with what you're going to be seeing mm-hmm. on the weekend. And then you can get a refresher on, okay, yeah. This is, you know, this slider's more horizontal than vertical. And, you know, this fastball, he likes to run it up in the upper third, and you can combine that with what you remember. I've always been fascinated about, there's some guys who can go and like break down full at-bats and break down like everything that happened. And I'm like, that's just amazing to have that kind of recall a year later.
Yeah. No, it's, I could sometimes, and then, but I was just more of like, I know what pitch it was and where
ball,
it was.
Ball.
And, yeah.
I was about to say, you really felt like your approach was see ball, hit ball. And I don't mean that derogatorily. I just mean that like you were really good at, hey, this is what you're doing. I'm just going to hit whatever you're doing. So
yeah.
I kind of get that. I'm sure every guy's different.
Yes.
When it came to the pitching in Hoover, and this is something I've just kind of been thinking a lot about as well, was there almost a little bit of a hope that some of these games could have been less, I guess not close, some of these games could have been more of comfortable and in hand, so you could have thrown different guys and gotten some guys some chances? Or was it, hey, you know, we know how these guys look in practice and in bullpens. Let's just not have any sort of concerns about maybe this one slipping away. Let's just throw LJ Cormier for four innings because we know it's going to hold. It's going to seal this win against A&M, and we'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think it was more of, we're going to get to Sunday. You know, we're going to throw everything we got that we know that works. Is just going to get to Sunday, period.
Yeah, and that was kind of the big question for me was at what point do you acknowledge, or I guess do we acknowledge, hey, the outcome of this ultimately doesn't matter in the long run. We'd like to win.
Yes.
And so do we use this as a chance to work some guys? And to your point, you guys were like, no, we want to win this. We're going to act like it does matter, and we're going to push as far as we can. Yeah. So that makes sense.
We were treating like a normal weekend. So, and then when we got to Sunday, we would have seen all those guys. And we would have competed.
I was about to say, we'd have been able to throw just a bunch of guys because we went through the standard three-game series for a weekend.
Yep.
And the standard six or seven arms that we usually use. Yeah. We saw Georgia for three games. Had you guys gotten to Sunday and faced Georgia again, what's it like to face a team for a late season series and then turn right around and face them again? Because like in MLB, we talk a lot about how the schedule right now, like the Braves played Boston a week and a half ago, and now they're playing Boston again. And so they're seeing the same relievers again. Mm-hmm. They're seeing all the same guys again. Does that kind of hold true in college? Like, would you guys, you think, have had more of an advantage had you gotten into Georgia's pen on a Sunday and you just faced them for a three-game series a week and a half ago? Or was it just, hey, they're still the better team and we still have to try to figure out how to make it happen against them?
Well, in 2022, we played Kentucky three times and then came to the tournament and played them a fourth straight time.
And they beat you, I think.
And they beat us. They beat us 3 out of 4 times. So it's like, it's like either you either like, okay, you know, we feel comfortable seeing them, or like, oh my gosh, I don't want to see these guys ever again.
Probably depends on what happened in the first season, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yes. No, but we would have felt good about playing Georgia just because we know what they have on their day three stuff. Day three guys. We would have felt comfortable against them.
And like, you guys outscored them.
Yeah.
We outscored in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was it 22-15, I think. Like, you guys outscored them in the series. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, all three games, the run differential, you guys were better, but obviously that blowout helped in day three.
Yeah.
I do think that's kind of an underrated part of this Auburn team. I talk about it a lot. I guess I think I'm the one who talks about it too much, but the ability to get into a bullpen early in game one and make them throw a lot of arms over the first two games so that when you get to game three, they're either bringing guys back without much rest or they're having to go to their sixth and seventh and eighth option arms.
Yeah.
Does that kind of still hold for a regional? Like, is that still kind of the plan? Is just, you know, we're going to count on the fact that our day three guys are better than their day three guys?
Yeah, I mean, not many people have a Jackson Sanders who comes in after the starter, or an LJ that comes in after the starter. And now,
I mean, he just
threw 5 innings. I didn't know he had 5 innings in him like that. I thought he was more of like a 2-inning guy.
I also so did not.
He the threw fact seven, that we have
he
that.
Threw one less pitch than Petro did.
Yeah.
He threw 70
like,
pitches.
The fact that we have that, it's like, okay, like, you know, just don't – the boys should be like, hey, we got three of the best 1-2 combos in the country, so get to a super regional, and it's kind of over, you know.
Yeah.
If you got to play three games in that super, it's our game three is way better than their game three.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel is – That's really the core competency of this Auburn baseball team is not only having really good pitching and one of the best rotations in the entire field, but having the depth where you can throw six guys in a weekend and just nobody else is doing that. And that's kind of unique to have that much depth and to have that much opportunity and then to have guys in the pen, to your point, that we trust. You'd have seen them had it gone to a fourth game. And if something like if this weekend, if in regionals, if this ends up going four either way out of the loser's bracket or the winner's bracket, it feels like Auburn's prepared to handle a game four.
Like our four is still better than their four. Like, you know, we got Griffin Graves, who's got experience. We got Kulik, Brewer, and, you know, it just keeps going on. We got Abe Chancellor, who's got a sub-2 ERA on the season.
And has barely gotten into games because
we
don't have a chance to use them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's hard. Like, I feel bad for those guys, but it's like, hey, like, we don't need you. We win before we get to you. So it's like, sorry.
It's like you're in the play. Like, Abe Chancellor has an 0.75. He's allowed one earned run in 12 innings, and he can't, he can barely get into games because they're blowouts. Right?
And when he comes in, it's great. He throws strikes, he gets people out. It's nice. But it's like, hey, we don't need you yet. Like,
it's like, dog, you're gonna be a really good pitcher for us when we have a chance to play you. Yeah,
yeah, like him and Abe Kulik and Brewer. I swear they warm up every game, and it's like, oh well, we won before you got in. Sorry.
Oh golly, that's
I've
talked to pro relievers who are like, getting dry humped is the worst thing in the world. Yeah. When you warm up and you can't get into the game, you have all that adrenaline running. You get a chance to use it.
Yes,
that's that's tough. That's tough. Okay. Since we're not going to have you for the preview with me and Brad in just a little bit, real quick, if we see a pitcher outside of that top six this weekend, and it's a guy that's going to come up in a big spot and who's going to come through for Auburn, is it Abe Chancellor? Who's that guy for you?
I mean, I think it's really going to be Griffin. If I'm thinking like, yo, like, oh, we got to hit the panic button. You know, stuff's going on. I think because Griffin's just got that experience. Because now we don't play anymore midweek, so he's not our midweek guy anymore. He's
fresh. Yeah,
he's what he was last year. Come out of the bullpen and shut it. So,
I think people forget that Griffin Graves was expected to be the number one starter on this team, and then just the injury kept him down for long enough, and he's been playing his way back into shape. So,
yeah,
it's a good point.
Yep.
That's a good name. I was expecting, you know, Abe Chancellor is being the guy. And
like, I think Abe's going to have if we get into a jam, Abe would come in and get out of that jam.
Yeah.
If we need like, hey, Abe, just go out there and just do it, please. Type of thing. So
All right. This will be it for you on the show. So best of luck this weekend. We're going to be really excited to obviously to hear from you next week, win or lose, about what happened, how it went, and what's going to go forward for Auburn baseball, as well as your future plans now that you've graduated and, you know, you've gotten your degree from Auburn. But those of you who are with us still, stay tuned. Just a second. We're going to have an interview. The three of us sat down with Eric Guevara, Auburn third baseman, for what I thought was a really good interview on how Hoover went, how the season went for him, guys to be mindful of, the impact of NIL on him and his family. A lot of great stuff. So stay tuned for that right here on the Barn Baseball Show.
We're joined now by Eric Guevara, Auburn's standout third baseman, and really good of him to join us on the show. Eric, we appreciate it very much. Just how excited is this team for the regional? It's like a softball first question for you, but just how excited is this team for the regional coming up?
Yeah, first of all, thank you guys for having me. Everybody's super excited to get this thing going on Friday. You know, we got the first game at noon, and you know, everybody's just super excited to get everything rolling.
If I can ask one more follow-up before the other guys start the rotation here, it seems like, because it's Auburn's fourth time hosting in the last 5 years, you value the regional, but like, explain the mindset of the team that, you know, it's almost expected at this point, like hosting a regional, where does that fall among the goals for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at our team, you know, and when we talk about things, you know, the first thing we want to do is, of course, win games. And, you know, I think that if we have that perspective, it'll take us to a regional, you know, every year if we do the things that we're supposed to do. And, it's within our locker room and all this stuff, it's kind of what we expect. You know, we expect to be there. We expect to be the team that, you know, everybody wants to be, and we expect to, you know, be on the hunt every time and just to be other teams and stuff. And yeah, I mean, playing at home to start the playoffs, don't get much better than that.
You know, and Eric, this was really the first, I feel like, fully healthy season that you've been able to have at Auburn. And because of that, your numbers have been fantastic. How much have you been able to kind of sit back and think, like, I'm glad that I had this health and was able to post 55 times versus how much is it just you're focused so much on the game in front of you and the series in front of you? Like, have you had a chance to sit back and just think about the season that you've had so far?
I mean, not really. You look at it a couple of times, but I mean, when you're playing, you know, Tuesday and then you got game either Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, mm-hmm. It's just on to the next. But I mean, of course, I'm, you know, super blessed and glad that I've been able to, you know, be out there almost every day. And you know, I think that the stuff that I've been doing with Tony in the weight room with CJ and with Anthony in the training room, you know, they've been keeping me on the field, and I'm super glad that I've been able to, you know, just contribute as much as I have this year to the team.
Yeah. Stick it on. I'm going to keep a follow-up real quick before I give it over to Sonny. You've played almost predominantly third base since you've been here, but you spent some time at shortstop. You had a little bit of time, I think, your first year at second, like a start or two. Which position's your favorite to play, and which one do you think you are the best at?
Definitely, I would say third base. I mean, yeah. It just, I guess, it comes easy to me. You know, it feels like a walk in the park when I'm there. It feels like it's, you know, my spot, you know, where I'm supposed to be. And yeah, I mean, it's just super fun to play right now behind these pitchers we have. You know, they keep it the game so fast, and they throw so many strikes that it's so nice to be behind them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like going back on kind of talking about you played every game but one this year. I remember the way you didn't play in Missouri game three. Is that right?
Yeah. Or yeah. I played, yeah. Well, two, I guess, that Missouri game three and then that midweek.
Oh, then the midweek. Okay. Midweek. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, it's a testament to be able to play every game. You know, it's especially with the injury history that you've had, and it's not easy to play every game because you got to have a process, you got to have a routine that only works for you. Like you and I, if we were to do the same exact routine, that wouldn't work, right? And you got to put in a little more than somebody else just because of what it takes to get you to the top of what you need to be from the rehab that you have had. So it's it's incredible that you've been able to bounce back like that. And it's been fun to watch.
Appreciate that, Sonny. I mean, and of course it's been, you know, a lot of work in the weight room and training room, but it's always been, you know, body first and then baseball to make sure I'm staying on top of everything to make sure I'm feeling good.
Eric, what is the challenge or what was it like this year? Because now the midweeks are done. If you're playing games on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, they're going to be in Omaha. Going through the SEC schedule and then playing a midweek, was that a challenge? How much of a challenge? Just kind of describe what you have to do mentally as a player to make sure the focus is there for midweeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenge, you know, just like every game. But, I mean, back to what Sonny was saying, you know, when you have that process and when you have that preparation, it's kind of just the same. I mean, you go in there, you get ready to play a game, and, you know, sometimes I just felt like things just weren't falling our way a couple of midweeks and stuff. And, it's harder, you know. You don't have a Friday night packed house anywhere that you're going for a midweek. And of course, the energy – you know, it's not the same at some of the stadiums that we're playing at, but it, at the end of the day, it's the same game, you know. And, you know, if you want to have a career long time, you got to be ready to play on a Tuesday, on a Monday, or whenever it is, you know.
Yeah, midweeks are definitely tough to get. You just had a brutal three-game series. You got Texas at home, right? It's like, man, that was a battle. And then one day off, not even a day off, you got one day of practice, and then Tuesday rolls around. It's like, well, here we go. We're going to play Georgia Tech. It's just like it can be a beating.
On the note of like Georgia Tech and things like that, the schedule that you guys played, this was the hardest schedule in the country. Going into the year, did you guys know this was going to be the toughest? And what was the outlook as far as like, hey, we're not really ever going to get a break with an easy game? Was it frustration? Was it excitement? Was it just, it doesn't matter, we're going to play the same game no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of everything, you know. Butch, of course, talked about it, you know. Like he said, we want this. This is what we want. And, you know, we all took upon that, and we all wanted it too. You know, it was just go out there and play your game. We knew we had the pieces, you know. Mm-hmm. We knew if we just play for each other and play the right way, you know, things were going to fall our way. And, you know, for the most part, things did fall our way. And, I just think that it shows, you know, just the grit and the courage of the guys that just show up every day and all wanting the same thing. But yeah, I mean, we all wanted it. We all wanted to be the best team, and we all wanted to be at the top. So I think that, you know, starting this weekend, it don't matter because, you know, it's just kind of like a brand new season. But, you know, we put ourselves in a good position for sure.
Eric, you finished the year to this point, you're hitting .335. You got an on-base percentage over .400. Going into regionals, to have an OBP over .400 is fantastic. Tell the fans about your approach, maybe going into a regional. How much of it is new pitchers and what they have done? You're scouting the opponent. And how much of your preparation as a hitter is, all right, how have other teams pitched to me in terms of what you're looking for when you go to the plate?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, you of course got to look at the pitchers and what his strengths are. You know, I think talking to Gabe today, he said that we might face a righty. You know, we got like 4-pitch mix, you know, just a little bit of everything. But yeah, you just usually, I mean, for me, it's been this past two, three weeks been spin. And just going into this weekend, you know, got to take into account that. And then, but, you know, just going up there with your plan, when my plan is just hit a fastball to the second baseman's head, and I just stick to my plan. And then whatever they throw, it speaks my bat up. I'm just going to be there ready for it. But for the most part, you know, nothing changes for my part because it's worked so far this year. So I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing. And, of course, like if a guy comes in the game and he's 60, 70% breaking balls, you know, then the plan changes and we shift. And if I go to the game and it's like, it's these guys are just not throwing me a fastball, then the plan shifts. But for the most part, you know, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to go try and hit my pitch.
Yeah. Coach Thompson said something today of, you know, don't look at, because we are playing lesser opponents. We are in this regional. That's just how I got ranked. We're the one seed and we got to play a 2-3-4 seed. So Coach Thompson said it best of like, just if you have to imagine they got an SEC jersey on, by God, do it. And that's the best. That is the best way. Because in 2022, when we hosted, we had like what you're seeing now is like, oh, we have like the lowest RPI of a region, a regional. It's like our average RPI is like 83 or something. Whatever, yeah. I just saw. In 2022, we had like the hardest regional. We had us, UCLA, Florida State, and Southeastern Louisiana. And it's kind of like being on the opposite ends of the spectrum of that is still, BT said the same thing, going in and just picture that as an SEC team because we handled the SEC like we were supposed to all year.
You mentioned the environment sometimes and where you've been going and how not every environment's been the same as what you get at home and stuff like that. We're not going to talk bad about other environments. What's been the best road environment you've played in this season? And for whatever reason, maybe it's the food that I know what Bub would say because he got fed he got fed in Mississippi State, but like what for you has been the best road environment of the year?
You know, I would say Texas A&M was up there, but we shut them out so fast that, you know, we didn't really get to experience the whole thing because we were up so big early. Yeah. But then Mississippi State was definitely, you know, when it comes to just the stadium, the fans, it was definitely, you know, just the coolest experience. And then, of course, the SEC tournament was also really, really cool.
Yes, yes. Like, the, it, I think we said it.
Like we were playing at home, though, when we were at the SEC tournament. That was for sure.
Yeah, we set a record for the Wednesday attendance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or for a Wednesday attendance game, which is
– That's the Auburn effect, folks. That's the Auburn effect.
That is the Auburn effect. Eric, how important has Brandon McCrain been at short to be able to take that position and make it his this year? So like, because early on, like they tried you at short and him at third. And like you said, you're just so natural at third. And the fact that he's just kind of taken short and made it his, and now you at third, him at short, Chris at second, Bing at first. And that's given that infield a real comfortable, familiar feel this year.
100%. I mean, kid's so athletic. Like, I feel like you could put him anywhere in the field and he's going to be able to be fine with it. But, I mean, he's the things that he's done, the job that he's put in, you know, even when it comes with, like, Sonny, you know, the work that he put in with Sonny, all the stuff that he's been learning, you know, kid just keeps learning and just keep wanting to get better. And it's just – shows up and it's kind of like the rewards of all the hard work he's put in. You know, he worked in the fall at short, you know, but he was a little bit of short, a little bit of third, a mm-hmm. little bit of second. Mm-hmm. And then opportunity came up and he just made the best out of it for sure.
Yeah, we definitely would not be what we are without what he's done by far. And he learned quick. I mean, EG will tell you in those times in the fall where he was still – because last fall he spent the whole fall doing outfield, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He spent the whole fall doing outfield, spent the whole summer playing first base. Come back in the season, now look at him. He's playing shortstop, right? So it's like he came to me, you know, there was a time in the fall where he was just – he wasn't getting the right reads and things like that. He came to me and said he wanted to get better and get work. And since that day, man, it's been like night and day, night and day.
Eric, at what point did you know that this pitching staff could be super special? Was it fall? Was it preseason spring or was it like a couple of weeks into the season? We were like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to say it was definitely like a couple of weeks into the season, you know, just seeing those guys go out there. And we're getting quality starts Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend. And then we had Dre on Tuesday at the beginning of the year and he was giving us quality starts too. It was just like, dude, like, I mean, some of these games, but we score one run and we're going to win the game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you don't look like they're going to give up a run. Yeah. So, I mean, just the freedom that they've given themselves as a pitching staff, you know, as in like, you know, one guy goes six and then they bring a reliever and he throws the rest of the game. And, you know, it just also gives us as an offense, you know, a breather and just be like, you know, sometimes you just got to score three runs, four runs. And then it's awesome for us, you know.
It's cool to see this team has that. Hey, if we score three runs, this game's over. Like we'll go Marciano to Sanders or Alvarez to Sanders. And it's like, don't worry about it. Whereas as in 2022, if we had the lead in the seventh, we were like, all right, we win.
Skip
it. Like we had Burkhalter coming in. Yeah. So it's cool to see the opposite.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. What you got, Lindsay?
Sorry. Yeah. Speaking of those pitchers, you know, like I think I think of it as kind of like a big six. And there's times you'll go all weekend and you'll just use those six, right? It's Marciano, it's Petro, it's Alvarez, it's Sanders, it's Cormier, you know, it's Ryan Hetzler. Who's the guy outside of those six that probably deserves to be in that conversation that just isn't getting enough chances, or that maybe we haven't realized this dude's filthy and he's going to be really, really good when he gets a chance?
I mean, I feel like we could go on and on with a name, you know. I think that we have
that's a good teammate right there. That's a good team.
Do that job, you know. I think that you think of guys like Garrett Brewer, you know, he had a really good start of the year and then he struggled a little bit, but he could be an awesome piece for us. Jet, he could be an awesome piece for us, you know. We have Marcel. Like, there's just so many guys that I think that are in the pen that, you know, that like Griffin, you know, he's still coming back from his injury, but he could be, you know, awesome for us. And, you know, we have a bunch of guys that could contribute as well as the guys that are already contributing.
Yeah, it's hard because you want these guys to get in there because you know they're good. But when you use six pitchers in a three-game weekend, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
This is hard. Like it, but we got them. They might not have the experience on the year, but they do have, like, man, these guys are going out there and doing it, so I can do it too.
Yeah, they have the talent. They have everything there. They just haven't had a chance to
play. For sure.
Okay, something that I think we've asked every player who's been on here, we've asked them this. What's the favorite home run that you've hit in your entire career? Do you remember?
I think I got it.
Okay.
Last year we're beating down South Carolina. Beating them down. And I don't know what the score was. Bases loaded, I hit a grand slam. I was like, "Oh, this is really cool." But the score, it was like a super, super high score. Like, it was Friday night. Like, we already scored, like, I don't know, 15, 18 runs. And he was just kind of like the cherry on top. And he was just, it was awesome.
It wasn't your 13th hit of the weekend yet. It was only your fifth.
Okay. So y'all won that game 24-2 on a run. Yeah. Golly. Yeah, you had a
so fun.
grand slam in the fifth inning. Lucas Steele, Cooper McMurray, and Ike Irish were on base, and you cleared them off. That's
wow.
I'll admit that's kind of fun. After that, South Carolina responded with a home run. So, you know, it's that Chris Paul meme of shooting, you know, hitting a three to narrow the lead to 50. Yeah. So nice.
What a great. Oh man,
I'm glad you like that.
Have you ever seen a catch? Or have you made a defensive play better, already shaking his head,
no,
better than Bub's catch the other night at the SEC tournament?
That was unbelievable. I have never seen that before. I mean, running full speed and then just crazy.
That's top for sure. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Does that top the Cason Howell catch at Jack State, Sonny?
Oh, now that's more meaningful game. So that's hard to say, but that Cason Howell catch, EG, I don't know if you know this catch.
I think I saw the video. He
Nick, dead center. He runs. He literally 1 foot, 2 foot on the wall and reaches up over the fence.
Yeah. I've seen that video.
Like, skill wise, Cason's catch was crazy, but Bub's catch was more meaningful for sure.
Yeah. Am I wrong, Eric, for thinking that Bub's the player that has just the natural talent that can take over a game in like every facet, whether it's defense, whether it's at the plate? Just, he feels like the guy that can literally do anything, and if it clicks right, he can single-handedly win you a game as like just a athletic freak. Like, is that
now that's, you're right, you're right about that. I mean, the guy's so strong. Like, you see the balls he hit. Like, if you ever seen him take BP, you'd be like really surprised how far the ball goes in BP. I mean, he does it in the game too, but
it's just
he's just unbelievable, honestly. And all the stuff that he's been doing for us this year and all the contribution he's had on this team, it's been awesome.
What's something I always like to ask athletes this of different teams? What is something, Eric, that NIL and playing at Auburn has allowed you to do that maybe you wouldn't be able to do otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for sure, like, at least on like my parents' side, like, it's a relief for them that they don't have to, you know, be thinking about me and like what I need. And it's allowed them to come and visit me more because of that. You know, they don't have to, you know, spend more money on me because, you know, I'll be able to take care of myself right now. And, you know, just being able to see them, it's you know, multiple times a year. Like, my dad's coming again on Friday, and, like, it's just like, this is going to be, like, the third time he's been here this year. And I'm just super happy that I get to see them as often as I do now because of the blessings that come with NIL.
Yeah.
And every time EG's parents come, he's hitting like 900. So keep that in your books.
Can we start a fund to make sure that they're here? If we,
I know, right?
If we, you know, when we go to Omaha, they need to be in Omaha too, just to make sure.
They need.
Yeah. Final thoughts going into regionals. This is obviously second straight year that you've had a chance to do this. Again, fully healthy year for you. How much of, like, at this point, are there any nerves, or is this just, hey, like, we're going to go out, we're going to play our game that we do every single weekend, and whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the mindset that we all got to go in there with. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be nerves because, you know, any game you play, I don't think we'll all be humans if you don't feel, you know, the little nerves coming into you. But, I mean, that's what you got to do. You just got to go out there and play your game, you know, execute what you got to execute, you know, on the pitching side, on the defense side, on the hitting side. And, you know, if you execute those things, then good things are going to happen to us for sure.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
All good. I'm excited to watch you play and hit you some more fungos.
Come on now.
For the next year.
All right. Good stuff. Eric, thank you very much. Can't wait to watch you guys this weekend. Yes, War Eagle.
Thank you, guys. War Eagle, sir.
Final segment of the big blowout episode of the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby joined by Mr. Bradford T. Law, the pride of Piedmont, Alabama. Here to talk about regionals this weekend. Auburn is hosting. It's going to be fun. They got NC State, UCF in the bracket, in the field. But before that, Milwaukee on Friday night. Brad, when we saw the bracket, I think for me, I was a little, I guess, maybe surprised at not being intimidated by the teams, if that makes sense. I thought NC State was a little bit of a questionable whether they should have been in the field at all. Milwaukee wasn't the best team this year. They did win the league. Obviously, winning the Horizon League matters, but it feels like, all things considered, this is a easier field than they could have gotten.
Yeah, and that's, you know, look, we can have that perspective. The coaches and the teams will obviously have a different mindset going in. I don't know. I've seen some stuff this week from the same people who had Auburn as a 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. National seed, by the way.
The haters.
A couple of weeks ago. So, well, Auburn has the softest regional. But I've also seen stuff that says, well, you got to put Auburn on upset alert. I feel like people are throwing stuff at the wall. The RPI for Milwaukee is in the 200. I know it's in the 200s. And I think it's in the high 200s. They were 1-11 against Power 4 teams. They are an appropriate 4 seed. And I know we'll spend more time on UCF and NC State probably. And I understand you can never overlook, like, I know all the platitudes.
Yeah.
But if Auburn is the number 4 national seed, and it is, they should come take care of business against Milwaukee. This should be a game that we don't think about much, unless it's like Southeastern Louisiana in 22 when you have some record setting offensive performances. Like, otherwise, you take care of business and you move on.
Yeah. And to their credit, and this is actually kind of funny how it worked out, when you look at their quad one and their quad two games, they had 4 games in quad one, and it was away in a midweek against Purdue, and it was Southeastern Missouri was their other quad one series. And they went 0-4 in quad one, but they tried, like, they ambitiously scheduled. They had LSU, they had Notre Dame, they had Duke, they had Minnesota. It's just all of those teams weren't that good this year. And so they were all quad two games. They got swept by LSU. These games weren't that close. 21-7, 16-5. They lost 3 out of 4 to Duke.
They lost both games against Minnesota. They lost to Notre Dame. Their one quad two win was Duke. And so, yeah, it feels like, at least from this first round matchup, this is what you would expect, who you would expect to face. And it's going to come down to just Auburn doing what they do. I've had a lot of people ask me this week, do you save Jake Marciano for day two? And I think my perspective here is influenced by Auburn's strength.
Yeah.
If you had a rotation with a bunch of injuries and you had one stud and then you were piecing the rest of it together, I think it would make sense to discuss, do you save your stud for Saturday? But I think in Auburn's case, you've got six guys you could throw out there to start a game and you wouldn't feel bad about it. And so I think you keep them on schedule. You throw Marciano in game one and you go from there.
You've got to, this sounds maybe the most homerish thing I've ever said on this show. And I've said a lot of homerish things.
Okay.
Auburn doesn't just have four aces in the deck. They've got a loaded deck. They've got a trick deck. They have five aces in the deck and a top flight closer. It's like you've got, you know, it's like you're allowed to play hands with the Joker cards because it's not just the four aces. LJ Cormier is an ace.
Yeah.
Ryan Hetzler's an ace. You've got those jokers in your deck and you're allowed to play with them. I think it's six of one, half a dozen of another. Whether you want to go Marciano to Sanders game one or Alvarez to Cormier, or if you want to go Sanders to Cormier and then Marciano to Cormier and then Alvarez to Sanders, or flip-flop. Those guys are interchangeable, completely interchangeable, and they'll have all had an extra day of rest.
That's where I was going next, was I think the other reason you throw Marciano in game one is to keep him as close as possible to routine after he got moved up to Wednesday last week. I think I don't necessarily want him to get, I mean, he'll have extra rest, but if you push him to Saturday, that's just another, and he's not, it's another day, and he's not always been a Saturday guy. He's been game one. And so
something we can discuss now, the coaches don't do this. It's just, this isn't Butch Thompson's DNA to look ahead, but who would you want throwing game one of a super regional? Do you want Marciano throwing game one, or do you want Alvarez throwing game one? Because Alvarez started, I guess, he opened half of your series in conference play.
Yeah, because of Thursday, Friday, Saturday games.
Yeah. So do you want him to open a super, or do you want Marciano to open it? Which ace do you want to play? The ace of hearts or the ace of clubs? Which one?
Yeah.
Do you factor that in at all in who you start against Milwaukee? It's a Milwaukee team that in conference play hit 30 home runs and had 54 doubles. I mean, they had almost 100 extra base hits in conference play. They slugged .466 in league play. Charlie Marion was their top home run hitter. He had 7 homers and 10 doubles. Mm-hmm. Also struck out 20 times. Dominic Kibler hit .386 in Horizon League play. They're a more hitting forward team than they are pitching forward.
Yeah.
Who do you like more, the righty Alvarez or the lefty Marciano against that offensive lineup?
Yeah. When you look at their pitching, it's kind of a thing. I'm assuming they go with what they did in the conference tournament. They opened up with Eric Imke, which is A-R-I-C. I saw that and I was like, am I getting this wrong? Eric, is this a typo? Eric Imke.
Yeah.
Good luck for you guys, because like they're in the booth. You've got Eric Imke, you've got Gavin Theis, T-H-E-I-S.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or Theis. One of their most frequently used relievers is Caden, I think it's Kuhnke, C-U-H-N-K-E. Like, I don't know. Good luck, Brad. You and friend of the program, Andy Burcham, have your work cut out ahead of you there. Yeah. Speaking of, do you get like pronunciation guides from the other SID or like, okay.
And then we double up and we typically go to their broadcaster
and just
be like, all right, this one.
Making sure I'm right.
Let's make sure on this, because sometimes pronunciation guides aren't much help.
Sometimes I can confirm.
Sometimes they're not much help at all. So
I did a week of minor league ball back in 23. I was calling a week of games for the Biscuits, and they were playing Chattanooga, which is a Cincinnati affiliate, and they gave us a pronunciation guide. And about a third of the names, I was like, I don't know if this is helpful for me. And they didn't have broadcasters go on the road. And so I, in essence, I went down to batting practice after the first day, and I'm like, hey, can I just run this by you to make sure that I'm right here? So
yeah. Or you get a guy and they think they're going to be real slick in the pronunciation guide, and they go, sounds like this, but that word is a homonym. It's just like, what are we doing?
That doesn't help. That does not help at all.
That's why we double up even with the pronunciation guide.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I forgot. I saw these names and I'm like, oh, golly, that's going to be hard. That's going to be fun. And obviously I don't have to say them that much other than a post game show to talk about it. You have to do it live during the whole thing with a lot more people watching. Okay. So offensive lineup, we're kind of thinking, you know, Auburn's that the matchup's going to be based on, or the starter, or I guess, sorry, the piggyback for Marciano is probably going to be based on who they like to fit in there. Do you subscribe? I think we've talked about this before. Maybe it's me and Sonny. But do you subscribe to the idea of you have a starter and his stuff is working, the piggyback should double down on that? Or the piggyback should be as massive of a contrast in styles as possible?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think if it's been successful, you piggyback it. Because it's the same stuff. It's the same pitch plan. It's the same, you know, if it's working,
right,
let's keep doing it. And then let them adjust after the game.
Okay. I feel like sometimes the advanced numbers and the third time through the order thing kind of say, like, hey, if it's worked twice and you're going to the bullpen now, rather than let them adjust to still see, you know, that lefty curveball from that slot and all of that. Like, it comes up a lot for me. I think about the Atlanta Braves. They have veteran Martin Perez. He's a lefty throwing 90. And then they bring in Didier Fuentes, who's like a higher slot righty pumping 98. Yeah. And it's like they do different things with their breaking balls. And it's just a whole thing. And I'm like, I like the contrast there. Yeah. So guys can't get comfortable. Their hitters can't adjust too much before it's something different. But I think it works both ways. I like the way that you worded that.
Yeah, because it's not square peg, square hole either. Like, did they do better the second time through the order than the first? Are they starting to figure it out? Yeah. Did the starter have to gut through a couple of really tough innings? And so now we think they are in position to tee off a third time through. And how, because we're talking about Marciano and Sanders or Dre and LJ.
Yeah.
So even though it's the same arm side, is it the same stuff? Is it the same slot? Is there a little variance? Okay, now I got Marciano down, so I'm going to handle Sanders. But Sanders different get a little speeds. Lower with this slot, and it's going to be, you know, a couple miles an hour different. And so I think I've got it figured out, but I don't really have it figured out.
It's different enough where we're not going to jump into this head quickly. Yeah, that's just always been a fun conversation. Yeah. And what do you do there? Kind of hypothetical. I think what's hard, and Sonny mentioned this when we talked about the Hoover recap earlier, is getting guys up and then not using them. And I feel like you're kind of you probably know by the fourth inning. It's like, hey, it looks like we're going to go with A over B. But I kind of think about, you know, getting guys up and then they don't get into the game because you pivot, you go the other direction. And it's like, well, in the stat sheet, he doesn't show as having, you know, obviously gotten to the game. But maybe he's not available tomorrow now because he got up and he warmed up and he, you know, started doing all of his stuff and he got hot and then just didn't get in. They call that, and I apologize for those, if my mom's listening, they call that getting dry humped. That's what it's called when a reliever warms up and then doesn't get into the game.
Yeah.
So that's always a fun one. Okay.
Gotcha. All right. I didn't know that. So I've learned something new.
That's a fun one. Yeah. You probably can't use that in the broadcast, I'm guessing, but you're welcome. You're welcome to have it.
No,
if you want it.
I was going to say I'm not going to use that with the Alabama Broadcasters Hall of Famer Andy Burcham right beside me, but
nope.
but it's good to know. Good to learn something new.
Yeah, there you go. Something you can, when you're talking to a coach, you can be like, hey, you know, yeah.
Sure.
You know, kind of throw it out there to show that you know ball. UCF, sure. UCF and NC State. Guys, we're like 40, like 50 minutes into this whole thing. We're kind of going a little crazy here. Yeah. All right. NC State, UCF. I can see an argument for both teams, but I feel like UCF is the one, not just because of seeding, but because of how these teams have performed when they've been challenged. Like, UCF should be the team that ends up meeting Auburn on Saturday. But am I wrong for thinking that NC State, having that head coach that's retiring, Scott Avent, you know, he's already announced he's done after the tournament. Can that be one of those things that fuels and motivates you a little bit to outperform in the regional?
Oh, I don't know. That's hard to answer because let me give you two different arguments that I could buy. Okay. Argument A is Elliott Avant is really influential and the players love him and he is NC State baseball and the players come there to play for him and they care and they want to go out like that. You give me that argument, I buy it. I get it.
Yeah.
I also buy players are wondering who they're going to play for next year. Like, are they going to play for the guy that they've named the coach? Are they going to play for the assistant? Are they already fielding offers from other schools and
transfer?
Have they checked out a little bit or how much does it actually mean to the player today to, play for a coach who's going, like, how much does that mean? I don't know. So if you tell me that guys are already looking ahead, that's a believable argument too. So I don't know. I guess we got to wait and get to Saturday and find out.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting. I don't know what to make of this NC State team. They had obviously they had a very aggressive conference schedule. You know, in the ACC, they faced off with Georgia Tech. They were swept. They faced off with North Carolina. They lost 2 out of 3. They played Florida State, who we played Tech. We played Florida State.
Yeah.
Virginia, they had the conference play. And then they didn't really test themselves out of conference. Yeah. They had one quad one non-con, and it was a win over East Carolina on the road. And then they won the home and home, the other half of that. They played Coastal. They beat Coastal. They lost to Liberty at home and then UNCW, and that's it.
Yeah.
Is the conference schedule for NC State enough to prepare them to face a team like Auburn and a team like a UCF? Is this, they didn't succeed in that schedule. Why would somebody think they would succeed in this regional?
They were 6-11 in road games. They're 2-1. In neutral sites. They're 6-11 on the road. UCF was 10-9 in road games. I look at that a lot when regionals come to play too, especially in the 2-3 matchup. Mm-hmm. Which team went on the road and won more? Because I know it's a neutral site, but it's away from home.
Yeah.
And UCF won more away from home. I don't know why that's the case. Like, I don't begin to know the formula for, you know, what makes road success or failure, but I know that UCF has won more away from Orlando than NC State has won away from Raleigh. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a tougher road for the Wolfpack than for the Knights.
Yeah, that's kind of when I look at, I think for me, I always pay attention to like the neutral site games.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that most
sure
replicates the format they're going to have in a regional. So like UCF went 2-3 in neutral site games. And if you kind of look at, you know, some of this was tournament stuff, but some of this was conference tournament stuff. Some of this was them playing a tournament early in the year, like they did in February. They played LSU.
Yeah.
They played Notre Dame. Who was the other one of that? And Indiana. Yeah. And they beat Notre Dame. They lost to LSU 11-0. They got, you know, beat up there. And then they lost to Indiana 6-1. Yeah. And it's like, well, when they played something that closest replicates this format, they struggled. Yeah. But at the same time, how similar is your team in February to now? I think that's,
well,
that's, you know,
But that's a good point, though, because we look at Auburn's success. We talk about Auburn going to Arlington the last 2 years. And when they've gone to Arlington and had success there, it's usually meant good things because they've had a taste of that. And NC State did that. They went to Puerto Rico to start the season, beat Washington like a drum in seven innings, beat Indiana State and scored 10 runs, and then had their third game canceled against Seton Hall. So, you know, in those new in the true neutral environment rather than facing the other team and their fans. But then again, if you get past game one, who are you facing? You're facing the home team with their fans.
Yeah. So
I guess it's a different question. Do you like them better in game one or game two? They're two different conversations, game one to game two.
I do think for NC State, too, it does matter that the two games that they played, Washington ended up being a quad three game. Yeah. And the very bottom of quad three, 156 in RPI, and then beating Indiana State, they were 163 in RPI, and that was a quad four game. And so I do think it's worth pointing out they had that. The other neutral site game they played was in the tournament, and that was Duke, and they lost 21-12, and that was a quad three game as well. So I'll say this about
NC State. Now, they have a win over Coastal Carolina in a midweek.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 6-4.
And they got swept by Georgia Tech, but it's worth noting they gave up 3 and 6 runs in the first two games of that series.
Yep.
So, again, now that's on the road in a bandbox of a ballpark where Georgia Tech averages something like 38 runs a game. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but only a little bit.
Only time.
Yeah. And they were able to hold them down in the first two games. So they're capable of putting together a pitching plan and holding an offense in check.
Yeah. It feels like.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the question for all these teams, though, is are they going to score? How much are they going to be able to score against a rested Auburn pitching staff?
Yeah. I was about to say in that series, the issue for them was they scored five runs in three games. Yeah. That was shutout in game three, 3-1 loss, 6-4 loss, and then 10-0. So that was kind of the issue there. And a lot of their quad one games that didn't go well were either they couldn't execute the pitching plan and they got kind of blown up late, or they couldn't score runs. They lost 4-0 Virginia Tech. They lost 5-4 Virginia Tech, you know, things like that. So
yeah,
worth conversation. We're going to get to our picks in just a second. Before we do that, I know Auburn asked for the late game. And they got the early game because apparently nobody who actually plays or does college baseball makes these decisions. ESPN makes these decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the school, it's not the conference, it's not the NCAA. It's ESPN decides when you get to play baseball. Yeah. I'm very grateful that they graciously allowed us to have a game. Period. thank you, ESPN overlords. Do we think that having the game at 1 versus 6 is going to significantly impact anything?
No.
Like, I personally have already gotten off of work. Like, I am off of work. I'll be there in the press box and everything. But, like, on short notice like that, being during the day, I don't think the team's going to be impacted.
No.
This is going to be a full ballpark no matter what, yes. Right?
Yes. Yes. My least, it doesn't matter what I think. The most dangerous thing that a team can do is get concerned with when you play or who you play or where you play or any of that nonsense.
Yeah.
This is the postseason.
Yeah.
You tell me when first pitch is. Tell me when to report to the ballpark. Tell me where I'm batting in the order or if you need me to pitch today and I'll get ready. I don't care about the other stuff. There is a segment, all right, now for a select few people who can't get off work and can't make it, all right, that's legitimate. Like, that sucks for you. Yeah. Like, that's a bad thing, all right? And we'll acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. It has no bearing on the game. It should have no bearing on the game. You know, people will you can give your tickets or sell your tickets to somebody else. They'll be there. They'll be loud. There'll be 8,000 people at the ballpark Friday at noon and 8,000 Saturday at whatever time and Sunday at whatever time. And it'll have no bearing whatsoever on the performance of the team, what time you play. I cannot strong. I know we're over an hour now into the show.
No, we're fine. We're
strongly
fine.
Enough say that it does not matter when you play, where you play, who you play. It's the dang postseason. Show up and do the job and get it done.
There we go. It is worth pointing out, as long as they win, they get the game times they want going forward. They get 7 p.m. on Saturday and 7 p.m. on Sunday, provided they win. Don't you feel like Sunday should be a little bit earlier? Like the loser's bracket game is at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
And then this is at 7. I keep going back to that UCLA championship game where it rained and we had to finish on Monday.
Yeah.
Like, don't you feel like you could move that game from 2 p.m. up a little bit so you can move the final game up a little bit and have some wiggle room in there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But again, TV dictates that. And
yeah, we should call ESPN and ask permission, I guess.
I mean, look, they pay enough, man. They're the ones. They say jumping, everybody says how high. That's just, that's just the way we play the game.
They pay enough. You think they'd want to show more of these games on actual ESPN and not streaming. Auburn's game's on ESPN Plus at noon.
Hey. Auburn Sports Network coverage starts 15 minutes before first pitch, baby.
That is right. See, this was me leading into a natural plug for you.
Wherever you listen to our broadcast is exact. Like, for one game is where you can listen to it for the regional games. That never changes. And, by the way, you don't need a subscription plan.
Ooh, really?
You don't need a monthly. Ain't no subscription plan to listen to the broadcast. You got a Hall of Famer sitting in the chair next to me calling games.
A Hall of Famer and a future Hall of Famer in Andy Burcham and Bradford T. Law.
Yeah. 15 minutes before first pitch, baby. That's where we'll be.
There we go. All right. Picks real quick. I've got Auburn hosting the Super Regional after this.
Yeah, 3-0.
3-0.
3-0, because that's what Butch Thompson's teams have done in regionals. All right? If you take out the one anomaly, which was the 23 season. Mm-hmm. They've blown through regionals. And I don't expect this to be any different because of anti any of the other three teams, but I just Auburn's strength, their readiness, their health, their battery meter's pretty close to 100% right now. So give me 3-0.
And if Auburn does advance after this weekend, obviously we're going to be back to talk about that.
Yep.
They would face the winner of the Nebraska regional. It's Nebraska, Ole Miss, Arizona State, and South Dakota State. I would much rather have this draw than that draw.
Yeah.
Being completely honest.
I don't care what draw. I wouldn't care whatsoever. Cause I don't care when you play, where you play, who you play. I want to get that Kevin Steele mindset back in football when I would ask him a question about that. And he'd go, doesn't matter when you play, who you play, where you play, doesn't matter. Just give them to me. I don't want to run from any regional. I don't want to run. I just give me all of it. Give me five more wins. Give me five more wins and let's pack a bag to Omaha.
Five more wins, pack a bag to Omaha. Boy, the Barn baseball shows from Omaha, Brad Law in Omaha, they're going to be lit, man. They're going to be so good.
We probably need to end the show because I'm getting a little fired up.
Okay.
And I'm ready for first pitch. I hope everybody else is too. Serious business. Say hello to us at the ballpark over the weekend. Please let us know that you listen to or watch the show. We love talking to you. And we really do appreciate you listening or watching this longer than usual edition of the Barn Baseball Show.
Yes, thank you for being here. Tell your friends, share it with your friends. If they're hyped about Auburn baseball, they haven't been watching all year. Hey, these guys are breaking down regionals. They're talking to one of the team's stars, and Eric Guevara. They're breaking down what you need to know about this. Share it with a friend. For Brad Law, for Sonny DeShera, I'm Lindsey Crosby. This has been the Barn Baseball Show.